Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour of the show here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Darren is off today. Elijah Campbell back at the studio, as we promised you. We're going to talk to Nick Green, who is an analyst for Fox Sports South for the Atlanta Braves. And they have won a playoff series for the first time since 2001. Hard to believe it's been that long for them. They've made it a few times since then, but a good breakthrough against the Reds did not allow a run in the two games, and so they now move forward. So, Nick, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, you got it, man. We're pretty excited to see what happens in this division series for sure.
Well, first, let's look at the accomplishment of beating the Reds twice. The big question, I think, for a lot of people, especially during the course of the season, was would they have enough in the starting pitching to get through? Everybody, I think, felt pretty good about their bullpen, but boy, did they get outstanding starting pitching. It couldn't have been any better.
No, and going into the postseason, I think everybody started to feel good about where they were as far as the top three guys. Max Fried was back. He's healthy. I thought there might be a little bit of rust in game one of the wild card series just because he hadn't pitched in so long, and he didn't have the innings built up. After he got hurt, then he comes back and gets hurt again in his second start back off the IL. But he looked great. And he's a young kid, but he's got some experience. He knows how to pitch. And I think that's the one thing with young kids. How quickly do they learn how to pitch? And he learned how to pitch this year without his best stuff at times, and he needed it in game one. So I love Max Fried and where he was going in. And Ian Anderson, this kid is going to be really, really special. I thought he was in a good spot going in, and he showed us that he's one of those guys that can give you five, six, seven innings every time out and let your team compete, give you a chance to win. We didn't get to see Kyle Wright, but I'm excited to see him in the division series. So those top three guys, I started to feel really good about the last few weeks of the season, and the top two guys were great in the wild card series.
And it will be the Miami Marlins that they face. And, Nick, they did announce that it will be Kyle Wright, you know, Vanderbilt product. We're very familiar with him in these parts. And so we're very happy that he took the big step forward late. I don't think we could have imagined him starting this game in game three as recently as, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago when he was sent back to the alternate site.
Yeah, he struggled bad. And it just baffled me a little bit that they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him and how to correct it. And Josh Tomlin would end up being the guy that helped him with the move to the first base side even farther over on the rubber, which helped his two-seam fastball work more of the plate. And then he started going to his curveball more. See, early on in the season, he was fastball that was missing arm side all the time. So he didn't feel comfortable with it. Then he throws a slider, which I think is his third best pitch, but they felt like that was his second. He threw it a ton, didn't throw the curveball, and he didn't know where to go. And then he moves over farther on the rubber. Now the two-seam fastball is as nasty as it gets. He's playing in the strike zone longer. He's throwing his curveball for strikes. He's throwing it a lot more. He's throwing it for a swing and miss pitch as well. And then using a slider when he needs it. So I really like what he's done. And when he came back, his first start back from Gwinnett, I thought he was going to be much better. I didn't know he was going to be this good because he still had some things to work on. He didn't have a feel for the slider and the curveball quite as much. That second start was awesome, and the third start he just built off of. So I think they've got a really good arm in Kyle Wright. I thought that for a while, but now he's starting to put it together. Did we expect him to be pitching in the playoffs and starting game three of the division series? Absolutely not. But that's how things work out. He's got an opportunity. It's kind of been a crazy season, but what happens when you get the opportunity? You've got to take advantage, and he's taken advantage so far.
Well, let's pick up on that same theme with the opportunity. They get the opportunity to play the upset-minded Marlins, who absolutely nobody would have had in this series. But when you watch the Marlins, you have to appreciate how resilient and scrappy they've been. But what are your thoughts? The Braves have played the Marlins a bunch this year. They've had their way with them. I mean, everybody remembers the 29-8 game. But how dangerous do you see this Marlins team?
They're dangerous, and we said this at the beginning of the year because they started off so hot, and it was almost like we have nothing to lose, and we're just going to go out and try to beat the odds, and they've done that. But they have really good starting pitching. Now, Urania's hurt, and Elias or Hernandez is hurt too, so they're down to more than likely in game one. It's going to be Alcantara, that's what it is. Anyway, I can't say his name. I got to get right.
Sandy. We'll just call him Sandy.
We'll call him Sandy. So he's legit, though. The Braves did not see him this year. And I think that's a big factor, and it's going to benefit the Marlins. We saw what happened in the Red Series. They didn't see Bauer this year. They didn't see Castillo this year. That's tough when you have stuff. And Alcantara has stuff. So that's going to be interesting, that game one matchup, although they haven't announced that yet. Sixto Sanchez is legit. Should start game two. And then you look at Pablo Lopez in game three. I don't know where they're going to go after that, but I like those three young arms. And do they have the offense that will blow you away? No, they don't. But they still can beat you in many different ways. They run the bases well. They bunt guys over. They move runners. They take the extra base. So they do a lot of things right. And that's what wins the playoffs. So we'll see what happens, but they're a dangerous team. And especially when they have nothing to lose, they feel like they're playing on the house right now. It just, to me, it's the storybook for them. I don't know if the storybook is going to end the way storybooks end, but at the same time, they're doing a great job. So you cannot take them lightly, even though they're a team that I think the Braves should beat.
We're talking to Nick Green, who is an analyst for Fox Sports South and the Atlanta Braves. I think everybody figured that when the Braves signed Marcelo Ozuna in the offseason, which feels like forever ago, but because it was, but when they signed him, he was gonna make a big difference. But in a sense, do you think he's almost over delivered in what he's been able to do for Atlanta this year?
I think he has to a degree. I think that when you look at the DH and how that's played out, I think it's been perfect. I don't know if he would have the same performance if he played every day in left field. Obviously, he hasn't been great in left field, so you want to see him in that DH spot. But when you look at the advanced metrics and what the Braves did when they signed him, they knew everything should get better. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to get better, but what he did last year and what his numbers suggested that he do were different. So his batting average was, I think, .241 last year, and his expected batting average was .291. He hits the ball hard. He hits a bunch of home runs. So they expected all those numbers to increase, and they got even more out of that. He's just been more consistent to me this year. The mechanics of his swing look better. He's not lunging at the ball quite as much. He was early in spring training, so he struggled bad in spring training one, and he fixed that during the quarantine, and he got off to a good start. He just continued to hit. So I think that when you look at the value they got out of him, I don't think there's a better value of a free agent sign this past offseason than Marcelo Ozuna.
And then what have you seen out of young Christian Pache? I know there's obviously a lot of hype with him. He's one of the top prospects for the Atlanta Braves. We've seen him a handful of times this year. So what have you seen enough to really tell you what the future might hold?
No, I really haven't. What I've seen from him, just highlights and stuff, I think that his swing's gotten better. He's gotten bigger. He's gotten stronger. So he's putting balls over the fence versus just the gap power. His speed is there. His arm's there. The defense is obviously there. But is he going to hit at the big league level? That's the question. He has 4 at-bats in the big league. Didn't look great. And I think that when you evaluate how he did when he was up and he actually got to play, those at-bats didn't look good to me for the most part. So I think that's where the Braves said, okay, well, Ender Inciarte is really struggling badly, but we don't know if Pache is ready or not. We don't want to throw him out there. And we'd rather have Acuna out there and then piece together the right and left field. So that tells me a little bit something that I feel like he needs more development from the offensive side. The defense is obviously there. But I think the upside is there to be a really good player and a really good offensive player. It just we just haven't seen enough of it at the high level yet to really make that judgment.
So along the same lines of development and what a player can bring, Austin Riley has been with the club this season. We saw his debut last year, but you know obviously we're still some things that he can improve upon. What have you made of him this year at third base?
I like him. I don't think he's tapped into his full potential yet. I think he's getting there, and I think that's a good thing. When I evaluate Austin Riley from last year to this year, it's completely different. When he came out of the gates last year, he was hot in AAA. And a lot of times when you're hot in AAA, it doesn't matter who you face in the big leagues, you're going to have success early. Then they started to figure out what his weaknesses were, and they adjusted to that. He couldn't adjust back. So what he does in the offseason goes and makes an adjustment with a swing to try to simplify things, make things more consistent, and he's done that. The best thing that happened to Austin Riley was Johan Camargo did not take control of that third base job. Ozzie Albies ends up getting hurt, and they have to run Riley out there every day. I'm just looking at his numbers right now. He only hit 239, which isn't great. There's a lot more in the tank there. He's starting to figure out how to dial down his swing a little bit to hit the ball to right field, to shorten things up, and then take advantage of mistakes for his home run power. So I think there's a long way for him to go, but I've been really impressed with what he's done. I'm not surprised he's played third base as well as he has. I thought he was a really good left fielder last year. He has athleticism. He can move left to right. He can come in on balls. And I just like what he provides defensively at third. And I think he's going to get better at the plate as well. So he's come up with big moments. I love him hitting at the bottom of the order right now, just lengthening it and with that power threat at the bottom. So I think there's a lot of room to grow with Austin Riley, but I really like what he's done this year and the improvement he's made.
Nick, leave us with this. I'm thinking of Austin Riley. I'm thinking of Adam Duvall, Ozuna for sure, although it doesn't matter, I don't think, what park he plays in, or Acuna for that matter. But I'm thinking of the park factor for Minute Maid Park, right? That short porch, the Crawford boxes down there. Yep. Do you think it's a positive for the Braves that this series is played there?
I think so. The balls fly there. And this the comparison of power from the Marlins to the Braves, I think it plays into the Braves' favor. When you have a lineup that can hit home runs in a big ballpark like Truist Park, and you go to a park like Minute Maid where the ball flies, I don't see how it cannot be an advantage to that team. And the Braves have done a really good job with home run power this year. The Marlins really have it. So it could be a lot of home runs, and that would play in the Braves' favor for sure.
Nick, great stuff. Thank you for your insight. Enjoy the series, and we'll be enjoying your coverage. Tell people if they want to see. Are you guys doing some coverage on Fox?
So yeah, we're doing pre and post game. Yeah. We're doing a pregame as well. It's going to be an hour long before every game. The first four games start at 2 p.m. So we'll be on at 1, and it should be on Fox Sports Southeast, if I'm not mistaken. We obviously won't carry the game, but we'll be on about 30 seconds after the game, so flip over for post-game coverage as well.
Yeah, Predator fans are familiar with that format, so if you're a Predator fan or Braves fan, you know where to find that stuff. So, Nick, looking forward to it, and good luck to the Braves.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Nick Green, former Braves infielder, part of their analyst team. The series starts tomorrow at 1 o'clock Nashville time at Minute Maid Park. They're in the bubble now. Marlins and Braves, best of five. And, of course, the other one, Dodgers-Padres. And in the American League today, it's Astros-A's, and then the nightcap is Yankees-Rays. When we come back, we will continue forward here on 102.5 The Game. A lot to discuss. We haven't even hit the NBA Finals from last night. We'll keep you up to date on any new football information that comes out there. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase.
Butler backs in. That fallaway shot is up and good.
It was a big night. In the NBA Finals last night, Jimmy Butler put the team on his shoulders, and it was not overlooked by me how Mike Breen and all of the announcers talked about how special that win was for the Heat. To play a team as great as the Lakers, down 2-0 without two great players, two of the key players, and find a way to win to keep the series alive, not go down 3-0, maybe get some help back in the next game. Great performance. It is only one game. I don't know if history will really remember that game very much if the Lakers win 4-1, but if the Heat do come back and make this really close, then last night's performance will even take a bigger role. Great job by Jimmy Butler and the Heat.
Yeah, that was only the third 40-point triple-double in NBA Finals history, second to two fellas named Jerry West and LeBron James. So,
and because the scores tend to be a little higher these days, you don't blink as much when a guy hits for 40, because there's been some people that have done that. There's been people hit for 50. But wow, I mean, when you put it in historical perspective like that, yeah, this is a scoring era, but man, that's still incredibly impressive.
Yeah, especially to create with those two guys down. I mean, Bam is the premier shot creator on that team almost. He's a point guard at times. So Jimmy Butler, not known for getting a lot of assist or shot creation for others too, getting, 13 assists last night, especially when a lot of those assists were to guys like Kelly Olynyk and Myers Leonard, two guys that haven't really played much during this playoff run. Puts it into a lot of perspective, too. And Goran Dragic was also the same way. I mean, your two best shot creators weren't there last night, and Jimmy Butler picked it up. So that was probably as impressive of an NBA Finals win as you're going to see, because they're completely outmatched. And I would have said they were outmatched even when they're fully healthy. But last night was incredible. That was a really impressive win for Miami. And it just goes to show their culture, too. I mean, you can't get down on them early and expect to win, because it's the second time in the series the Lakers got down double digits in the first quarter, and the first time they came back and ended up blowing them out. But last night was a different story, because Jimmy Butler basically just willed them to win, even though the Lakers came back on multiple accords and even tied the game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I kept thinking the Lakers would blow by him at some point, and it didn't happen. So what's the outlook now health-wise? Do they get anybody back the next game?
Bam, possibly. I think that one's more likely. I don't think we see Dragic back until Game 6, if that's a thing, or Game 7, if they somehow are able to push it to a Game 7, because his injury is incredibly painful, tearing that plantar fascia in the bottom of his foot. That's gonna be hard to come back from, especially given the style of play that Dragic has. So I don't really expect to see him the entire series, but I think we can get Bam back as soon as Tuesday for Game 4, and if that's the case,
that'd be
huge. Yeah, and I've said it all during this entire postseason. Like, Bam reminds me of Draymond Green for the Warriors in 2015 as being a smaller center that you're able to use as a fulcrum of your offense to create shots for other guys, and almost be like a de facto backup point guard. And you can grab the rebound and set up your offense. And it would be huge to have Bam back. And if he comes back and they play like they did last night and they're able to knock down a lot of the threes that they did, Kelly Olynyk's getting some production, if Myers Leonard's able to give you some minutes if guys get in foul trouble, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Heat steal one more, even without Dragic.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Do you think this was an admiration that, you know, they just get one and then L.A. closes it out, or could they?
I think that's the most likely scenario, no matter what. I think the Lakers still have more in the tank, and I'm not saying they coasted last night or anything, but Game 3 was one thing. To win another game will be even tougher. I think the Heat know that. Here's one thing, guys, that I thought was noteworthy, historical-wise, just from the NBA history. This is to put in perspective the greatness of LeBron James. Last night, he moved past John Stockton into second place all time for NBA playoff assists. Now, assists per game, you know, LeBron's played a lot of playoff games, but when you think of LeBron James, the first thing that comes to mind isn't necessarily he's a great passer, right? He does a lot of things.
No, you think of scoring.
Right? Now, when you think of Magic Johnson, who's number one, and John Stockton, who's number three, it's the first thing you think of, right? Wizards with the ball passing, right? Point guards, distributors. But LeBron James is now second only to Magic in all-time playoff assists. That's pretty impressive. It just shows you a great he does everything well.
Oh yeah, and I could even argue that's probably the best part of his game at times too, especially this year.
I think Jeff Van Gundy sort of made that case last night that of all the things we think of LeBron, the spectacular dunks, the power, you know, the size combination, the athleticism, the defense, it might be the best part of his game. Oh, right? His passing.
And to give you another picture of like his all around game, like I think last night was the first time in LeBron's playoff career where somebody had, whether it be on his team or another team, had more points, rebounds, and assists than he did. And that was what Jimmy Butler did last night. And LeBron James has played a lot of playoff games. So the last night was the first time that has ever happened in his career where someone just outdid him in all three of those statistical categories.
All right, when we come back, we will turn our attention back to football. We'll hit a little college, and we'll circle back to the Titans and the NFL as well.
There's some sports betting news, too, in the state of Tennessee.
I was just about to say that. So we will lead off with that when we come back. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, don't forget, everybody, Saturday, November the 14th. It's coming up in just over a month. You can support STARS by running, walking, or boogieing for the Nashville Striders' 20th annual Shelby Bottoms Boogie 5K and 15K run and walk. The event's perfect for the avid runner as well as the casual jogger. You've heard us talking about this. I will be there. It's on the certified course in the heart of Shelby Bottoms Park. It's a great place to run. Very flat, very scenic, and you can also show your support and participate virtually. It's up to you. That's Saturday, November 14th. I didn't say that very well. November 14th for the Nashville Striders Shelby Bottoms Boogie to benefit STARS. For more info, go to starsnashville.org. That's starsnashville.org. All right, you heard the money theme coming back. That means, Chase, give us the info on the sports betting in Tennessee.
So we all know that it's going to become official on November 1st. So you'll be able to place your bets on Titans Bengals once it all launches. We know that the different books have gone through an approval process. So far, BetMGM, FanDuel, and DraftKings, they have all been approved. They're going to be a part of this, but it looks like another one has received approval. Action 24/7, which is actually a Tennessee-based sports book, locally owned. They have gotten conditional approval from the Tennessee Lottery, so they will join the other three. It looks like on launch day, at least as of now, there are going to be four apps that you can download and be able to place your bets here in the state of Tennessee. So Music City Bets put that out there, and it's official that they have gotten conditional approval. So Action 24/7 joins the group of sports books.
Well, with that in mind, I know we all had our underdog picks, and we're watching very closely over the weekend for college football. We talked to Vince Ferrar earlier today. Tennessee's very excited for their matchup with Georgia. Georgia bounces back, handles Auburn pretty well. I guess the biggest surprise that we haven't really talked about today is, and maybe we shouldn't be totally shocked, but Mississippi State follows up their brilliant win at LSU by laying an egg and losing to Arkansas. Is it Mississippi State taking a big drop off, or is Arkansas way better than we thought, and they're pushing Georgia deep into the third quarter was maybe not as much of a fluke as we thought?
I mean, there could be some of that maybe Arkansas is a little bit better, but you know, you can also make the counter argument that Vandy pushed Texas A&M, and then you see LSU on the rebound after losing to Mississippi State. I just think it's really hard to tell right now outside of the Floridas and Georgia and Alabama. I actually wouldn't even put Georgia in that. I would say Florida and Alabama. It's just they're 2 weeks in. And so I think you're seeing some rust, that not every team is what you think they are. And there could be some of that. Maybe Arkansas is better than everybody thought they were going to be. But the fact of the matter is, it's just two games. But Mississippi State, that they had an answer for that offense. So can other teams do that, or is Mike Leach going to be able to rally the troops and get another signature win for his program? I guess time will tell.
Vanderbilt, meanwhile, loses 41-7 to LSU. So LSU bounces back, gets what they wanted, which was a stabilizing win after the rough loss where they had to hear the criticism all week. I watched a lot of the game, Chase. I was hoping Vanderbilt could stay in the game a little bit longer. They actually had some chances to do that. They made some decisions like going for it on 4th and 4 from the 40, down 14-0. So I mean, they did some things that you want to as the underdog, right? They had another play where they're down 14-7. They appear to have scored a touchdown. It wasn't quite ruled that way. They end up not being able to punch it in, and they miss a very short field goal. And so it's sort of demoralized. Everything's got to go right for them to stay into the game later, and it didn't happen this week. So I think this is what we're going to see with Vanderbilt in a lot of games that they play. The question for them is going to be when they play the Missouris, the Kentuckys, the South Carolinas, the teams that are a little bit more middle range to below average, how do they fare against those teams? I still think the jury's out.
Yeah, I mean it is, and I got to see a good chunk of the game while I was doing the Nashville SC game, but then it just kind of got away from Vanderbilt. My hope is that they can take some of the things that, and sorry, Sawyer is barking at something outside. That they can take some of the things that they did well against Texas A&M and even against LSU. I mean, there were some times where they were getting stops and you had some missed kicks and, like you said, going for it at times. That there was some good that you can take away, but now it's putting it all together into a full 60 and being able to come away with a win and not have the moral victory, so to speak, like you had in week 1 against Texas A&M. So
I see some flashes. They flash here and there of like, hey, pretty good play, that guy. But it's got to be more than that. And the biggest concern I have, because it eventually caught up to their defense, but their offensive line, you knew it was going to be a big question because they had some guys opt out, some guys that they projected to be starters. So they don't have much depth to begin with. And the guys they have, it was a struggle to protect the quarterback for any amount of time to execute a play. You know, teams aren't having to bring extra guys to get the rush. And, of course, LSU is going to have better talent than most. But to me, that's where a lot of the answers lie for their whole team. Can the offensive line give the young quarterback Seals a chance to do something? Right, I think their wide receiver talent, their tight end talent, their running back talent, even though it's a bunch of names that you don't know much about, it's not bad. I think there's enough there to be okay, but can the offensive line give them a chance to succeed? And I also think the defense is better coached, and I think they've got the ability to be okay. To me, the biggest goal is, I mean, let's be realistic here. It's really not, are they going to go 5-5 or 4-6 or anything? It's, do you have a good nucleus that you can build going into next year? Right? Is Seals at the end of the year clearly a guy that you think is an SEC quarterback that can be around for a while and you can put pieces around him with some good recruiting classes? Because, I mean, we knew it was going to be a struggle.
Right.
Right? Unless it was going to be a miracle out of nowhere, way better than we ever thought. It could be way better than you ever thought, but still they might only win 2 games or 3 games. Now, that's more than 0, right?
Yeah.
There are some people that aren't sure if they're going to win a game when you're playing all conference games. But week in, week out, improvement, finding a nucleus, that's the key.
I know a lot can happen between now and then. I think they can beat Missouri. I think that as this team, because another part of it is it's not just the players. It's kind of what we were talking about with Tennessee. I feel like that Derek Mason can actually be the head coach now. He's got 2 veteran guys in there, and Todd Fitch running the offense, Ted Roof running the defense. I didn't know anything about those guys when they were hired, or didn't know much about them. But after talking to them, doing research, talking to Coach Mason, and then seeing it now on the field, I feel like it's a good fit. Now, can they stay healthy? Can the players improve? Can the offensive line specifically improve? And can they, especially on offense, use the weapons that they have? Time will tell. But you were saying that from the defensive standpoint, I think offensively, I like Todd Fitch. I think that could be the key that they've been looking for with the offense, because as you know, Willie, it's all about working with the pieces that you have with this team. And I do think they have some talented pieces. It's just putting them all together.
Right. It's relative, right? They don't have a Keyshawn Vaughn.
Nope.
But do they have enough to be competitive?
I like Wakefield, though.
I do like Wakefield. And the other kid, is it number three? I forget. Is it Worley? Is that his name?
Or Marlowe.
Marlowe.
Yeah. Why not? Javion Marlowe.
Yes. I like him, too. He might be just as good or better. He's playing a lot for sure. So this is a week to week.
From Winter Haven, Florida.
Winter Haven, not far from my old stomping grounds there.
Yep.
The Red Sox used to train in Winter Haven back in the day. Let's bounce around a little bit as well. We should note, we mentioned Keyshawn Vaughn, first touchdown as an NFL player. Now, he had to be patient to get his chance because, as we know, the Buccaneers, they brought in Leonard Fournette. They had like three or four other running backs. They brought in LeSean McCoy. He waited his turn, and he had a big moment. Catches a pass out of the backfield and scores in a big win for the Bucs. That wasn't a blowout, right? So now, can he start getting more reps for Tampa Bay? That's an interesting question.
Not only did he score his first touchdown, and he'll always remember that moment, but he can say, yeah, it was a pass, and it was from Tom Brady. I mean, that's pretty
nice.
Cool.
So regardless of what happens from here, you've got that going for you.
Yeah, and it's cool to see the local talent being featured in the NFL. Now, we did see a little bit of a brawl between two local guys yesterday, and Golden Tate and Jalen Ramsey, but Jacob Phillips is making an impact in Cleveland. He had a couple of big plays yesterday. You mentioned Keyshawn Vaughn. So the Mid-State is being well represented right now in the NFL. And as you mentioned, just back to that game specifically, it wasn't a blowout. Tom Brady did have to lead a comeback, and they were able to get it done and keep it going. You're not seeing perfection out of Tom Brady and the Bucs yet. You're still seeing them trying to get on the same page, but so far it's starting to come together, and I think they'll be dangerous as the year goes on.
A note that has come down in the last 5 minutes or so, it's all over Twitter now, but Kevin Sumlin, the head coach for Arizona, the former head coach at Texas A&M, has tested positive for COVID. So he will have to do things virtually for a while as he begins the quarantine. So not good news for Arizona. But, of course, they're not in the middle of a season.
Yeah, they're starting middle of November?
What they're hoping for in terms of a season, which sort of brings up something I wanted to get at today. You still have the Big Ten and Pac-12, obviously, that haven't played. And I look at sometimes at the top 25, and I try to put it in perspective, right? If there's ever a year where there's an argument that there shouldn't really be a top 25 of note until at least 5 or 6 weeks into the season, this might be the year. But the rankings really have to be taken with a grain of salt right now.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they do. And I can't imagine how difficult it is to try and put all those together, because it's like, all right, do you leave out a team that's not playing, or do you factor in? Because we saw that before we knew if the Big Ten or the Pac-12 were going to be coming back, that the first few weeks you had some teams that wouldn't be in the top 25 that were, because you didn't think you were going to include those teams. So we always say that rankings don't matter and we put too much of an emphasis on rankings. I think that has never been more apparent than it is right now, because you have incomplete data. There's no way that you can put those rankings out and say, all right, this is exactly how it is, because you have some teams that aren't playing.
And you also have no games between conferences of note, especially for SEC teams. right? You have a very limited, a very limited batch of data to compare teams from one league against another. We know there's no Power 5 versus Power 5, so that makes it even more complicated as to how to figure out how to rank these teams. And then you're going to add another layer when the Big Ten and eventually the Pac-12 begin to play. It's going to be really, really tough, I think, to try to sift through and figure out who makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I would almost rather them just not have rankings right now. I know that they're going to keep them. They're not going to do that. But I would almost rather there just not be, because they're so convoluted and you're not going to be able to really be, able to figure things out. So, I don't know. Because the playoff, and again, the playoff committee, because you're going to have one league playing, seven games, and one league playing 10, and one league playing, it just, nothing is going to be fair or make sense this year, but it's what we have to go with.
When we come back, we'll wrap things up on the show. We'll look ahead to tonight, which is going to be another great night where you're drinking through the fire hose. You got more than you can possibly watch with two eyes. You've got two great football games, and you've got the Major League Baseball postseason, Yankees-Rays. It's a good night for channel flipping. You need your best on the clicker tonight. Whoever the best is in your household, you need that person on the clicker, because that person's got to be on the ball. Flip it over. Flip it here. Flip it there. Flip it there. My son and I are doing this constantly. You got to be a Jedi to watch all this stuff. Or you got to have about TVs. Seven TVs. Yeah. At least three tonight for sure. We're going to talk about when we come back. We'll also update you one more time on the latest with the Titans and their situation with COVID-19. Stay tuned. We're coming back. A little Remember the Titans triggered when you hear this song. Remember the Titans. We'll find out more tomorrow. Mike Vrabel expected to talk to the media tomorrow for the first time this week. And remember, Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game, with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown, and great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happ and Harry's draft beers, plus Happ and Harry's bucket specials. The best pregame show is live from the Corner Pub downtown location this Sunday. Now, keep your fingers crossed that the Titans will be taking on the Buffalo Bills. We're going to find out in the next 24 hours or so whether Bills they're on track mafia. There. Look out, because I do think you'll see some of that if the game is on. Of course, the Titans need another day of no positive tests. It's not a given, but today they were free of any new additions to the list. It broke the hitting streak of six straight days, but also looming is the findings of the NFL of what happened with Shane Bowen and the outbreak that has hurt them for now. So a lot of questions. Hopefully we'll get some answers tomorrow, especially if the game is on. Is there any chance that they will get any of the 10 players back who have tested positive? And then there's the already injured players that they were hoping to get back last week that we weren't sure about. So what is the week off? What has it done for them and their availability?
Yeah, and that's going to be the big question. I mean, I think you have to assume that you're not going to have many, if any, of those players. And then what are the position groups? I mean, is it do you have to go sign a long snapper? Do you want to go sign a fullback, or do you have another running back on the roster that can kind of fill the role that Kari Blasingame has played? The defensive line is the one that really concerns me, because you lose your two big pieces in Jeff Simmons and Daquan Jones. So a lot of questions there. You can fill some of the holes with depth players and starters, from the practice squad. But as Teron pointed out earlier, I mean, Adam Humphreys, he has been big for them this year as a slot receiver. I mean, he moves the chains. So that's obviously not an easy hole that you have to fill. Plus, the guy that you most likely would have looked at in a Cam Batson, he's on the COVID list too. So What are you going to do there? I mean, they are certainly going to have questions to answer, but I'm sure John Robinson has spent this time of going, okay, well, I got a plan. I got my list together. I'm going to start making calls, get some guys, you know, signed. But, I mean, can you really bring them in for a workout? How is all that going to work with the new protocols that are going to be in place for the Titans once they're back in the building?
It's going to be a huge challenge, and maybe more so than any other game that they've had since that group has been there. And I would even include the game against the Texans. I think, was it 2 years ago, his first year, when they had Lawan out and Conklin out. They had a host of injuries, including Mariota out. I mean, and they still figured out a way to win against the Texans. They're going to have to circle the wagons like that, and maybe more, to find a way to get this done against a very, very good Bills team. And that's if the game is on. And so we'll wait and see on that. Now let's get to tonight. So if you want to get your clicker ready to go, the baseball starts today at 3 o'clock, Astros A's, and then later Yankees Rays. Now those games are on TBS tonight. I know that there's been some questions that we get, what channel is the game on, right? Because there have been a lot of different channels. Remember, there were 8 series before. Now there's only 4. But the AL is on TBS. And that is tonight, well, this afternoon at 3, and then game 2 is at 7. Tomorrow, if you're wondering about the Braves and the Marlins, that game is on FS1 at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. You'll lose me for the last hour.
Right. So just remember that the National League games are on FS1. The American League games are on TBS. And then tonight for Monday Night Football, of course, you've got the 2 games. You've got ESPN's regular coverage of the Falcons and the Packers. Game is at 7:50.
They've moved the time back, which is important. And I think a good move by ESPN and the NFL. Because, quite frankly, the game that's been rescheduled, except no Cam Newton, I think was the more attractive game, at least on paper, before all of this. But they moved the regular Monday night game back a little bit so you can watch both, which I think is important.
And we've been following it closely because I think we've all been curious about that Patriots-Chiefs game. It is scheduled for a 6:05 kickoff on CBS. So you have a staggered start time, as Chase just mentioned. So that game will be probably into the fourth quarter as the Falcons-Packers starts. But the best thing going is that the game is on. And I still am waiting for everything to shake out where people can explain how everybody felt good enough about flying the Patriots on 2 different planes, right? Remember, they took one plane and had the players and people that were around Cam Newton separated from everybody else on the trip. So that kind of leads you to believe that there's still a few things that they got to make sure of before they feel good about playing. But the Patriots have made it all the way to Kansas City. They flew there today, and it looks like they're going to play the Chiefs tonight, which is something that I know, Chase, you and I own a fantasy football team together. We made the conscious decision to take all of the Patriots out of the lineup. We had Julian Edelman because we weren't 100% sure.
Yeah.
That they were going to play. But it was interesting how they kind of made the determination the game will be Monday in time yesterday for everybody to set their rosters.
Right.
Right? It was almost like they were thinking of the fantasy football world. I don't know if they were or not, but it was convenient for everybody that had to get their lineup in by noon.
Well, and it's funny, I'm in another league, my opponent has Gurley and Patrick Mahomes and Kelsey, and then everybody that I played the noon games yesterday that I played for my team, because my bench, I have all zeros because they were all out. Like, I had no bench. That's how bad my fantasy team was because of all these cancellations and postponements. So,
and this is a side note that could happen any week in fantasy, but this is why you don't enter into more than one league, and you definitely shouldn't go beyond 2, but on one of my teams, not the one you and I have, Chase, guess who I have at wide receiver? Odell Beckham.
Oh.
So I'm ecstatic watching him carve up and score all these points, have an amazing game. But then I look, who are we playing in our game? We're playing against Odell Beckham.
Yeah. Yeah, we had Kittle.
So this is why you don't go into more than one league if you can help it.
Kittle helped us out yesterday.
Yeah, George Kittle, for owners of him, he not only came back, but came back with a vengeance, even though the 49ers came up short. Speaking of, you referenced some local products. C.J. Beathard came off the bench last night, late in the game. If he didn't stay up, he almost led an improbable comeback. And I guess Garoppolo has got a chance to come back pretty soon, but I think C.J. Beathard took the backup job back, last night. He played very well.
Seems that way. And yeah, I mean, they had a shot to win it. He got the ball into the end zone. I think Kittle had a hand on it, couldn't pull it in.
I thought they had a chance that last pass.
For fantasy purposes, I was hoping that Kittle would pull it in.
Oh, yeah, I was hoping for that one more catch because we need a cushion. We need a cushion.
Well, and the touchdown.
That one. Yep. All right. Our show is in the books. We'll hand it off to Jared and the GM, and we will be back with you tomorrow on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Thanks for listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.